Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I am Trent Knox, the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I'll be the host on this episode of the EBN podcast, EBNP number 60. Our guest is Patrick Neff, Chief Gaming Officer of Texas Scholastic Esports Federation. In this podcast, Patrick and I converse about his journey into esports, the opportunities in Scholastics, and what options high schoolers have after they graduate.
This is the future. This is the future.
And we're back, and then we're going to add some graphics. And there we are. So we're back. Patrick and I just got off the stage, and been looking forward to having you on the live stream and cut this into a podcast. But
awesome.
Welcome to the show, Patrick Neff.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So get to introduce yourself.
Well, like I said, thank you for letting me be here. My name is Patrick Neff. I am the Director of Gaming for the Texas Scholastic Esports Federation. It's a nonprofit based here in Texas. Our goal is to get an esports program into every middle school and high school in the state of Texas, maybe elementary, once we're done with that, you know, just get everybody.
Yeah. And so are you guys working independently? Are you collaborating with things like the high school esports league or like some other associations?
We're pretty much a standalone organization. Okay. We're just a bunch of educators here in Texas that it's kind of funny how it started. I got a phone call from a guy. I had gone and talked to the UIL, which is our local like inter-school competition organization. I'd gone and said, "Hey, y'all should be doing esports," and they said, "What's that?" I got good feedback, but I wound up in the newspaper because of it. Some like journalist was in the room and mentioned my name about esports, and so this guy named Greg looked me up online, found the school I taught at, and reached out to me and said, "Hey, I'd love to talk to you. There's a couple of other teachers that, and we're all kind of talking about this stuff." And so he called me, and I wound up on a Discord, and then it kind of built from there. And it's just a bunch of local teachers here in Texas that wanted some options for our kids that weren't too expensive, that could provide local feedback and support, that could put on local events. Because, you know, if you're from my generation, some of the coolest memories I have are from like LAN events and, you know, moving to the dorms and having four original Xboxes with a stupid proprietary cable because they switched literally two wires so that you couldn't use a normal Ethernet. And like having four Xboxes and 16 people playing original Halo on like four different TVs. Those were the events that like stick with me about gaming. And we wanted to be able to do that here, you know, have those local events where you get to look at other kids and actually see them in the same room and all that. So,
yeah. So how many school districts?
You're going to put me on the spot. I know we're over 100 high schools and like 40 or 50 middle schools. Districts wise, a lot of those are in the same districts. And I'm not counting Dallas ISD, although we work with them as well. You know, the number changes daily. We're constantly getting new registrations. We started right in the middle of COVID. Like, our first season was the fall of COVID school. So we went from expecting nobody to expecting a few people. And I think we had at most 40 or 50 teams in any given competition. But there's at least 30 or 40 school districts that we're connected to one way or another. And we added like five more this weekend. So,
yeah, so headquarters in Houston?
We're based out of Dallas officially, but we don't have like an office space or anything. We're all teachers, so we're like working out of our houses on Discord and I stream out of my office at the house in College Station. I just have a green screen and a microphone and a camera, and that's it. So
you're based out of College Station?
I am, yes.
Okay, and then are you an active teacher?
I've been a teacher the last 6 years. I actually am not teaching this fall. I'm starting my PhD at Texas A&M in sports management. So I'm going to be doing research on esports at the PhD level.
Very cool. And so in that aspect, are you connected with Texas A&M esports?
I'm a member of the Discord group, and I was looking forward to meeting everybody now that we're back on campus. I'm hoping in the next couple of years that A&M's going to take the – because right now it's all student-run, and they're doing some phenomenal stuff, but they don't have any official support. And so I hope to see that change over the next couple of years as we're doing our research and as we're kind of pushing the idea of esports, that A&M will get on board and kick in some money, maybe hire a coach, because – that program is doing, I mean, phenomenal things with nothing backing them.
I'm curious about some questions. You can choose to answer them or not. Okay. So, you know, if we look at historically what's gone in collegiate esports, with the fact that essentially now Tesla is a defunct business, it was the Longhorn Gaming at one point in Texas. What is it? Texas Esports?
Yeah, I don't even remember what it stands for anymore.
Scholastic
Players Association.
And so now, with a little bit separate from that, Texas A&M has its own Dylan Liu. They created UConnect, which obviously does that feed back into the support of what Texas A&M Esports is.
To an extent, I can't tell you I know the answer to that, but I do think having former students, you're never a former alumni with A&M. This is a big thing with our culture. You're never a former Aggie. Yeah. You're a former student, but you're always an Aggie. Yes. Any A&M people in the audience know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, having those former students that have gone on and are building their own businesses, there is... You know, I worked a little bit with the system, the Board of Regents and the system people,
yeah.
And they about a year ago got reached out by an alumnus who wanted to talk about maybe putting some money behind an esports program at A&M and what that would look like. And so having those alumni that are out there doing things in the industry definitely helps. And then on top of that, just having a successful program already definitely doesn't hurt, but the collegiate space is in a weird spot. Like you said, TASPA's gone. You've got NACE, which, depending on which college person you ask, is either awesome or the devil. And I haven't heard much in between. People either love it or they hate it. And there was some thought that the NCAA might get involved, but I don't even know if the NCAA is going to exist in 5 years with this new name, image, and likeness stuff coming out, with the Supreme Court basically saying you can't do that anymore. So athletes can make money. So where does the NCAA even exist anymore? So I'm curious to see like what the next thing is, whether it's the conferences, you know, are we going to see a Big 12 esports conference or an SEC conference for esports? Because if not, then somebody's going to have to fill that gap. Somebody's going to have to come in and create the space. We've even talked about it with TechSep. You know, our focus is not collegiate, but if we put on tournaments, I promise you, Texas-based colleges are going to show up. So I'm really curious to see how the college scene evolves in the next couple of years, because it's in a weird flux right now that I don't think we, at least I don't know how it's going to all shake out.
Well, I mean, if you look at the University of Texas as an esports program, it's not even the flagship school that's most successful. UTD is actually the varsity program for...
Yeah, UT Dallas, UT Arlington, they've got scholarships, they've got coaches, they've got, like, infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's weird because esports has kind of been a thing for smaller schools to recruit and build themselves up.
Right.
And now the big schools are starting to realize that, hey, we got to get on this. And so... If Texas Tech is building a new esports program and center within their College of Communications, Maryville University in St. Louis, they have their esports program is its own department at the college. It's not under athletics. It's not under anything else. It's their own thing. And so we're starting to see bigger schools, bigger state schools with higher budgets looking at this. And, you know, if A&M decides to go all in on this, or UT or U of H or any of these the big tier one universities, they've got the funding. They've right. got the support to go in and dominate the space if they really want to.
Right.
So, I don't know.
It's about allocation of assets. And, you know, speaking of that, I've had a few former Robert Morris esports program folks on the podcast, Michael Wiesnes and Louis Laca. They both kind of formulated that program. I think it was the first ever varsity program in the United States. Mm-hmm. And if you have a collegiate program, it's a good one to model your program after.
Absolutely.
But yeah, collegiate wise, like I mentioned Dylan, as far as like having been from a Texas A&M and mm-hmm. built this company, UConnect. You know, whether I like it or not, he's commercialized it and made it more on the commercial side versus making it about the education aspect.
Sure.
And of course, you know, the folks who I don't even know who they are really that did TESPA, having sold it to Blizzard at this point. I think programmatically have made it into Blizzard Collegiate or yep. whatever have it.
You know, Riot has their own Riot Scholastic Association or whatever, RSAA.
Yeah.
That's what's so weird about esports compared to anything else that you see in like the sports space. Nobody owns football.
Right?
Nobody's going to take away your right to play football at the collegiate level, but if Riot decides they don't want to support a game, or Blizzard decides they don't want to support a game, or the game loses players and they decide it's a defunct game. I mean, look at Heroes of the Storm, right? Heroes of the Storm was a competitor to League, obviously never on the same level, but it was another MOBA. It was in that same space, and Blizzard, it never caught on the way they wanted, and they said, we're done supporting and, you know, updating this, and the game dies. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for colleges, for any program. I mean, we have the same problem. You know, we're going year to year, semester to semester, trying to decide what games are even going to be the game that year. And if a school jumps on board and buys 50 copies of Overwatch to have their team play Overwatch, and then Overwatch dies, or Overwatch 2 comes out and replaces it, or Valorant hits the market and picks up a chunk of the CSGO market, or you know, so many of these market forces that you don't have to deal with in other situations can completely change what you're doing. So it's hard to allocate resources properly, because when I go before a system president and I say, hey, you should have this program, well, what game should we play? A bunch of them, I guess. It's hard to narrow that down. And that's a challenge that you don't see in any other industry.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I guess I was going to tie the collegiate aspect back to the high school level in the sense of, is there a need for those that have participated in esports at the collegiate level to be educators, or is it more like, because I'm getting a lot of negative feedback about how school districts and how schools are approaching staffing the esports departments.
At the middle and high school level, most of us work either for next to nothing or nothing. I was lucky. I actually got paid for my after school hours. A lot of our esports people at high schools in Texas are pure volunteer. They don't get a penny. It's just they're choosing to stay an extra 4 to 6 hours a week or more on campus to provide a space for their kids, and they're not getting anything for it but the satisfaction of a job well done, which does not pay rent.
Right. Yeah.
I see this with a lot of smaller college programs. That I saw an ad that was something like, if you work 20 hours a week for the semester, it wound up paying like $350 an hour. And I'm going, you can't pretend like you're taking this seriously and pay that little. There is a need for these esports collegiate athletes to get involved at the high school and middle school level, whether that's as an educator or just so many of our... We call them general managers because in a lot of cases they're not coaches. They're the adult in the room. And they don't know the games well enough to provide any real coaching, to provide any real support. And so even just volunteering a couple of hours a week virtually at your high school or middle school that you went to, and providing a little bit of feedback. Like, I don't know what to tell somebody in Overwatch, like what they should have done or how to play better, because I'm terrible at the game. I know League of Legends pretty well. I know Rocket League decently well. But as you get further, I mean, there's so many games out there, and if we even just offer four or five, there's nobody that's going to be able to coach all of them well. And in a lot of cases, you've got somebody who can't coach any of them at all. And so being willing to reconnect with your school and provide that support would go a long way to helping those adults feel a little less out of their depth.
It's interesting. I don't think I've ever asked this question, but having mentioned that a lot of the opportunities in education space I've known this a lot of volunteer work, but I've never asked this question at the high school level or middle school level, if it's incorporated into their core curriculum as an extracurricular activity or what's the word for it? Like art, what is that called?
Oh, like as our electives?
Electives, right.
It really, for the most part, it's not. There are some schools that are starting to move that direction, but we're really early days on that. There are no official TEA here in Texas. That's our Texas Education Agency. There are no official like classes. My school is building a schedule out and kids take an AV class or whatever, it has this code attached to it that says this is what that credit means.
Yes.
Regardless of what my school district calls it, this means the equivalent of AV1 according to the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills Guidebook kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so there aren't any that are official statewide for esports. There are some districts that are pursuing their own local credit things where they're building their own thing. Humble ISD has a really cool class at Summer Creek that's like the business of esports, and it talks about the history and the space from a business perspective. But they're the only ones doing that. Some districts are starting to look at that. And what TechSep really pushes is take those AV classes that you already have, take the social media marketing class that you already offer, and attach them to your esports program. Have them run the social media for your club. Have them run the stream for your club. Because it doesn't need to be a whole brand new, like, yeah, I want to see some new classes pop up. But you can take what you're already doing and attach it to the program you have instead of trying to start over.
Yeah.
You don't need to reinvent the wheel in that case. But yeah, in a lot of cases, we're only after school. It's purely in addition to our duties, and it's not in any way, like, it's not on that level. And so that's a very frustrating thing for a lot of teachers.
Yeah, I was going to say it's also frustrating for the students and the parents, and it becomes problematic because there's no incentive. There's no direct incentive. But I've never actually asked that question. Good to hear more about it. Have you seen in other states? Is it different in other states?
It goes state by state. I know of a couple of places where they're pushing at the state level for recognition of certain courses, but for the states that I know one way or the other, in the majority of cases, the answer is no.
Right.
It's new enough, and it's not respected enough in a lot of ways. And that's part of what we're trying to do is just legitimize this space, because it's a growth area. I know it's a growth area. There's tons of jobs. There's tons of career paths. But a lot of our administrators are in their 50s, 60s, and they're not gamers. They don't come from a gamer background. And to them, they still see it as that waste of time that you're just, instead of doing something important, you're doing gaming, and they don't see the value in it. And so that's a tough, it's a whole mindset we have to change.
Yeah, absolutely. The process seems frustrating. So when you do talk to parents, how can you convince them to participate in the programs and let the students do that? Now, does it end up becoming daycare or like an after-school program because the parents can't pick up their kids until a certain amount of time?
I mean, there's any after-school club or sport, no matter what it is, there's going to be at least a few kids that are there because parents needed them to be watched for a little while longer, and that's what's available. Having said that, though, the biggest thing with parents, I think, is they need to be educated on it. As this younger generation is coming up, their parents grew up gaming, and so it's less of a challenge.
Yeah.
But for our older kids, our high school students, and even those early college right now, there's an aspect of having to educate them. And part of it is you can't be defensive about it. You can't, like, attack the parent of, why don't you get this and why don't you understand, which is how a lot of kids approach it, of, like, why don't you get this? Instead, you've gotta put it in front of them in a way they can understand it. You compare it to sports, especially early days of things like football, right? When football was first starting, it was not what it is today. It was not a multi-billion-dollar industry with tens of thousands of workers working for these leagues and all that. It was just a thing that existed, and some schools did it, and it was kind of weird, and not everybody knew about it. It expanded organically, and that's what esports is doing. So when you quote the statistic that more players watched the League of Legends World Championships than the Super Bowl last year, a lot of parents go, no, really? But yeah, I mean, 100 million people watched the League of Legends World Championships last year. They regularly get, like, it's already surpassed baseball and basketball in viewership consistently for a lot of these things. And so just educating the parents, letting them know that this is a legitimate career path, that just because your kid isn't the best at the game doesn't mean they can't take that passion and do something with it. And usually that gets a good response when you tell a parent, hey, you know the kid's playing anyway, and you've heard the kind of stuff they yell into their microphone. We're teaching them not to do that. And just changing that mindset alone will get a lot of parents on your side.
Yeah. And so are you guys able to integrate into, I don't know if you're familiar with this, like, I was part of a mentorship program called PALS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. I'm a PAL.
Okay.
So are those other programs, Boys and Girls Club,
there are some YMCAs that are starting to pop up. I've spoken to around the state of Texas different parks and rec organizations. I think we're, like, it's starting to get to the point where, you know, obviously a lot of those organizations, they're about providing a place for kids that either don't have the support or don't have a place to be. And so they see video games as another way to make that connection. And so those are starting to pop up. You are starting to see, again, I know YMCA groups have done this, especially in some of the bigger cities. I know Boys and Girls Club organizations have done it. And so it's not by any means, you know, statewide or nationwide yet, but more and more of those organizations are connecting what the kids are doing. There's a foundation here in based in Galveston that works with differently abled athletes, and they want to add an esports component. And one of their volunteers, a kid that just started at A&M, built a, like, 3D printed and designed a set of add-ons to an Xbox controller for a guy that has no arms. And he was able to play Halo using his feet with this specially designed, and this was all, like, 3D printed. And this kid developed it and worked with him. And he was kind of crushing it on Halo. And it was so cool to see, because all of these organizations, Special Olympics Texas, I mean, they're seeing the value in this, and they're connecting with video games, because it is by nature, at least it should be, inclusive by nature. And gaming is for everybody. So I love seeing that. I love seeing those mentorship programs doing it. I love seeing just community centers that are building now are often adding in computer labs for that same reason.
Right, the esports labs, which are amazing. I saw that, when I was growing up, I grew up north Austin area, Georgia, and here's the Epics.
Yeah, no.
Here we go.
I was like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm not nearly important enough for this music.
Yeah, I would say we should probably wrap it up anyway,
okay.
But I wanted to talk about recreational esports with you. We'll probably talk about that off air.
Sure.
A little bit, because you mentioned recreation centers and stuff like that, and that adopted. But to let audience know how to connect with Texas Scholastics Esports Federation, also with that.
Sure. So Texas Scholastics Esports Federation, we are techsef.org is our website. All of our social media is at techsef, except our Twitch, which is techsef1, the number one, not the word. And starting a week or two, you're going to be seeing high school kids all over the state of Texas competing in Rocket League and Smite. So that'll be a lot of fun. Come check us out. And if you're looking for me, I'm on Twitter. I don't post much, but I'm at RobotNeff, N-E-F-F. That's my last name. And that's pretty much my social media presence.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrick, for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to head off into intermission here again. See y'all later.
Hey y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.